glad to be here in Oracle Digital Product Hub today with my two guests, Jakub Gregus and Sean Patterson. Jakub is a researcher in the cryptocurrencies and the blockchain. He is also a one maker, and he has been observing this technology for years, participated in the community projects like Icon Index and some of the others. Sean Patterson, he is a regular speaker at first.
Thank you.
No problem. An advisor, and he's also a founder of EDP Capital. So both gentlemen, welcome, first of all.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, and very knowledgeable about the blockchain, which is a topic for today. So let me start with the first question. By the way, I'm Aleš Posásek, and I'm leading the sales consulting organization in Central Eastern Europe, but I will moderate the discussion here. So let me start with the first question. So Sean, how would you explain blockchain to somebody who's completely non-technical?
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of explanations, first of all. One that I really like is the analogy to a parking garage. And I took the liberty of writing it down, so I'm going to go off my notes here. If think about how a parking garage works, and we think about it in sort of a pre-blockchain era, we can see that there are some characteristics that are quite like how databases worked in the pre-blockchain era. So, for example, five considerations. Price. So some private company has built this parking garage, and they've built it exclusively for the purpose of parking. And, you know, there will be like a high rental fee built into this, and it's exclusively for parking in this garage. And then security-wise, if thieves get access to the door, to the main door, you can easily get to any car in the parking garage. And then, of course, in terms of limit, we can look at a parking garage. Once it's built, you don't really expand it. It's kind of there. So, like, let's say you have 200 car capacity in your parking garage, but then you need to build for 300 cars. You see this is a problem all the time in cities. So that's another challenge of like pre-blockchain era. And then on the plus side, there's sort of this level of trust, because we take our car to the parking garage, the parking company is the trusted source, and they're responsible for taking care of our car, the security, reliability of that parking space. And then, of course, this is a centralized solution. So everybody has to go to this parking garage to park their car, or I guess in this case, data is a block of data is what is analogous to the car. But then enter the blockchain era, and in this era, we don't need to store the cars in a parking garage. Rather, we can store them in garages at, say, people's homes, and people can rent out these spaces individually. So imagine we look at the same five factors. We look at price. Since people didn't build this second garage exclusively for renting out, it means that the cost of maintenance will be a lot less. The cost to rent that extra space will be much lower than if we were having to build a second parking garage. The security is also greater because each car is locked in a different garage space. So as the number of houses grows, and assuming each new house has an extra garage space, the space to keep the cars will keep increasing. So we're increasing the network capacity. And then in terms of trust, since there's no central authority controlling these distributed parking spaces, we assume that there will be certain rules set by all the participating garage owners for renting out their spaces. And most importantly, I think it's important to note that blockchain is, again, decentralized. So all of these parking spaces are distributed throughout the city, so we can consider it a sort of decentralized parking. Now, if we keep in mind that the cars are the data, and the parking spaces or the garage are the node where this data is stored, then we start to see a better, clearer picture of the potential of blockchain. And I think that's not a bad analogy.
The blockchain, it's the word that we are hearing often, very often these days. And mostly in connection to the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin in particular. So is blockchain the same thing as a Bitcoin, or has blockchain been designed for Bitcoin as a supporting technology, or is it something which had existed here before and Bitcoin only adopted this? Jakub, what's your view?
A great question. Today there are a lot of polemics if we can separate the Bitcoin and blockchain. I think of course yet, because blockchain is some sort of decentralized or distributed database. Mm-hmm. But the best use case for the blockchain until now was the Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, thanks to the Bitcoin, the blockchain is right now famous, one of the most famous technology, and very promising also.
Okay, so are you saying that the Bitcoin and blockchain cannot be separated, and it's the one thing? Or has blockchain been here before Bitcoin?
There was some technological structures or technological principles used or invented before, but Satoshi Nakamoto stick it very sophisticated to the Bitcoin and create the blockchain technology.
Okay. Sean, do you agree? Or are you aware of any blockchain existed before Bitcoin?
Yeah, well, let me first start by clarifying. I am founder of EDP Capital here in Prague, but I think my business partner would be upset if I didn't also mention that I'm the head of marketing strategy at Euro Digital Partners, also in Prague. with that in mind, I guess we can post the rest of my biography online. But look, it would be difficult, I think, to extract Bitcoin from the cryptocurrency conversation, and I think it would be difficult to extract cryptocurrency from the blockchain conversation, and I think I would suggest that we wouldn't know one without the other. Of course, as we discussed before, Bitcoin has been around for 10 years. It was in 2008 that the paper was published by Satoshi Nakamoto, and here we are 10 years on. In December 2017, we saw Bitcoin kind of hit its high peak of $19,783, which I think really took a lot of people aback. But it also meant that Bitcoin was perhaps here to stay, or at least it's arrived on the scene. So I think in that sense, it's a little bit hard to ignore. We're talking about a currency that had, you know, at its peak, nearly $200 billion in market cap. So I think it's an important topic of discussion, but I certainly don't think that you can only speak about Bitcoin or even only about cryptocurrency when we talk about blockchain. I think that they are linked, but I wouldn't keep the conversation at that point.
Do you think this will ever happen, that this technology is going to change this world rapidly in many industries like healthcare or government possibly?
Yeah, I think it's a real possibility. We've got 1% of chief information officers reporting that they already use some form of blockchain in their companies. 8% have experimented with blockchain within their companies. So I think as time marches on, as people discover new applications, certainly startups will be driving the development of blockchain. I think we're going to continue to see it adopted across both governmental organizations, non-governmental organizations, and large and small companies alike.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the blockchain is something which is an ambition to sustain here for years, for a long-term horizon? Jakub?
In some use cases, where is the where we can see the biggest power of blockchain, where you can skip the some strong intermediaries, like like payment processors or something like that, it will stay here, I think.
Because my feeling is that the blockchain, that's a database, which whatever you put into the blockchain, it will stay there forever, and it's distributed among all the nodes in the blockchain participants. So it's just like a snowball. So it's rolling down the hill, it's become bigger and bigger, multiplied by the number of the people participating in the blockchain. So for me, it doesn't look like something sustainable.
Actually, with the latest development, it's not absolutely true. We could see a lot of development on this side for the sustainability, like for example, side chains or sharding, or making hashes from hashes. Or a very interesting project is Coda Protocol, which raised like 45 million, and they can squeeze the blockchain to some snapshots, which is big, like 50 kilobytes.
Okay, and. This is without losing any information in the blockchain?
Good question. You can choose between losing some importation which is not so important, like in off-chain payment channels, mm-hmm. that not every transaction is recorded on-chain, on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. Which you can offload the big throughput. You can make the blockchain more lightweighted. But when you are making hashes from hashes and utilizing the Merkle root, which is a very interesting cryptography structure, you are not losing anyone. Comprising the big structures to quite long, but still just some shorts of line of code or characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Do you think that the blockchain will allow some completely new industries, as internet did? Right. So before internet, the first traditional, let's say, internet banking. Right. So it was moved onto the internet, but this is pretty much the same when you go to the bank and you want to change something. Now you can do it comfortably from home, but this is not a new industry. But then we saw many other new things which are so closely tied to internet that it's a completely new industry, which only exists because of internet. So do you see something? Do you see a potential there for blockchain to create any new industry, something like that? You mentioned the universal truth, so something like that, truth checker. I don't know.
Well, I guess what examples do you mean that were created only because of the internet?
Internet allowed the virtual things, and which never existed before.
Such as
Bitcoin, for example.
Yeah, but okay, fair enough. Bitcoin, as we know it, didn't exist more than 10 years ago. We already pointed that out. But basically, Bitcoin is simply a replacement for currency, which is, of course, the basis for all trade. So I wouldn't really classify it as like a new invention, but it certainly is an innovation in the way that we think about trade. But I mean, maybe we can look at some more concrete examples. I've got some from healthcare. I think healthcare is a huge area that's going to drive blockchain because there's so much money tied to it, simply by virtue of the fact that, we are in the U.S., for example, are spending more money on individual healthcare than any other country, and yet we don't see the best results. So it's an area that's ripe for innovation. So we look at companies like here in Europe, there's a company called Block Pharma. And Block Pharma is a French startup using blockchain technologies to fight counterfeiting. And this is a huge worldwide challenge. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Countries in Asia, Africa, South America, in these countries, counterfeit drugs comprise between 10 and 30% of the total medicine sales. Mm-hmm. So when you look at, when you look at the scope of that problem, and you look at blockchain being able to solve that problem, because it is allowing you to trace the path that these counterfeit drugs take through the market. I think that's a pretty important development.
And do you think it wouldn't be able without blockchain, just with using the traditional technologies? What would be the stopper there?
Well, I think one of the key challenges is the decentralization. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that pre-blockchain. Everything was kept in a centralized place. And I think the other thing is the immutability. It's just too easy to go in and change records, but with blockchain you don't. And that's to say nothing of the fact that if you look at the need to have data that's open and accessible by more than a few people, and certainly if you're tracking the path of a counterfeit drug from a manufacturer in Southeast Asia to the doorstep of someone in North America, that's a difficult thing to do. We see it in the food industry as well.
Yeah, but when we really talk about application among the population, so there needs to be some register saying that and this record or this ID means this person. And then when all the participants has an access into the central database, which is, all distributed across the whole the blockchain, then don't you see any... what's the way how to secure this at all? Can this exist somehow? Or is it either that it's anonymous or then everybody has access to everybody's record, which is great because everybody can check anything, but it's like way too much information about me exposed to everyone else in blockchain.
The transparency didn't mean the absolutely visibility. Like, for example, Bitcoin is not absolutely anonymous, it's pseudo-anonymous. Like, when you didn't reveal your identity, no one knows that it's you. And I think this is the way, like, in the future we will use technology called zero-knowledge proofs. Like, you can claim some facts without revealing your identity. And this technology was invented in the 90s, and there is still a lot of development. And I think we are quite close to start using it. Not like in 2 years, but maybe next 10 years, yes. And also there are still some risks, like in every new technology, and we have to be patient and wait when it will be mature enough.
By the way, are you aware of any examples when the blockchain really was a reason for any breach or issue or incident?
When you're asking, has blockchain technology directly caused some major catastrophe?
Well, probably not blockchain technology itself causing something, but blockchain being the vulnerable part or playing the major role in an incident anywhere. Because I was looking for this on the internet, I was not able to find anything. So I was asking you if you are aware of anything like that.
Well, of course, blockchain is like a technology enabler. Yeah. So it's not really designed to spread the world's ills. It's designed to solve problems. That's generally why we develop technologies, because there's a need. Having said that, you mentioned earlier social media, and I think it's perfectly acceptable, especially after some recent election results, to be skeptical of social media and the outsized impact that it plays on our democracy. And I think democracy is a key area where blockchain can solve some problems. One blockchain startup, Follow My Vote, has released a blockchain end-to-end voting solution. So basically what they want to do is they want to make sure that there's a verifiable audit trail of every voter's vote. So the goal is, in their case, assuring that no votes are changed or removed and no illegitimate votes are added. So that's an area where blockchain can have a positive effect. But is blockchain going to stop people from spreading nefarious information on social media networks? Probably not, because at the end of the day, it comes down to execution. Are companies like Facebook able or willing to cut down on the mountain of crap that's being spread on their social networks. Twitter is another example. And it doesn't seem that we're there yet. I mean, it's a massive effort to reduce the amount of spurious information out there.
Yeah, the execution, that's a good point. So it takes me to the blockchain 2.0, which is basically about, as per my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, about the smart contracts. It means that I put something into blockchain which is not ready yet. There needs to be a trigger, or there is a trigger, and if the condition or conditions are fulfilled, then something pulls the trigger and the transaction executes. So in like most simple way, if you have a great rating in your final exam, I will give you this number of bitcoins, so something like this. But there could be a variety of other, you know, conditional transactions, which I'm not sure that can be changed. So, for example, we make a deal. We will put it into blockchain, which is the source of truth, so it's there, you know, printed into the stone in the blockchain. And this deal will have conditions which are going to expect it to be fulfilled in 5 years. But over these 5 years, you know, the world is changing unpredictably, and this deal is not anymore valid. But this is still in there, and this is going to be executed if the conditions are fulfilled, and they can be fulfilled in, even without us. So is this okay? I think it's more a philosophical question, right? But it's something that you really make a contract which cannot be changed.
Well, I think there's an argument to say that you don't want to change a contract. I mean, perhaps we could step back and explain to people what a smart contract is, because I don't want to jump down the rabbit hole without the rabbit. let's say I'm entering into a bet with you, and let's say that I think that the temperature tomorrow morning is going to be 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is in Celsius. You'll pardon my lack of knowledge there.
I believe it's a pleasant temperature.
Yeah, decent day. So let's say you think that the temperature is going to be less than 70. So we decide to wager 10 bitcoins, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So now, if we don't trust each other, because we've just met, so it's perfectly acceptable that we might not have a strong bond, or we might have outsized motives or whatever. We usually would try to put this money into an escrow agent, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the escrow agent makes the determination about who won the bet. Mm-hmm. So he looks at the temperature the next morning, says, okay, the temperature is, let's say the temperature hits 71. Well, with a smart contract, you have a piece of code that automatically pays, in this case, me, because the temperature hit over 70. So that's great. And the reason it's great is because the contract is self-enforcing. And we don't have to endure this rigmarole of involving an escrow agent. So we don't have to worry about settling the bet. It automatically settles. And that's really the point. The other point is that it's hard to attack, it's hard to change, and it's hard to forge. And that's exactly what you want. If you want to create a new contract, go ahead and create a new contract. But it does nobody any good to have a contract that you go back later and say, no, that's not how I think this should work.
All right. And what if the contract is not about the Bitcoin, which can be directly executable by the code because it's virtual? What if this is something in the real world, which is somehow represented in the cyberspace? Let's talk about Internet of Things, for example. So we're not talking about blockchains, maybe we're talking about cars or houses or any other, like a physical object.
Exactly. This is a space where we still see some obstacles in usage, and where the technology is not the perfect, because you are still rely on some type of intermediaries, which is so-called oracles. Oracles is some technology like sensors, or it could be people who still need to put some input to the smart contract. or to the transaction, like in that case with temperature. You have to trust to that sensor that it's showing the right number.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to have some point in the contract that says, okay, this is what we're going to use to measure. But I mean, there are some real examples already in 2015. We're talking 3 years ago now. Visa partnered with DocuSign to provide a proof of concept project that allowed blockchain to aid in streamlining car leasing. So it transformed it into a click, sign, drive process. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about taking a huge and expensive part of the car leasing process, not just speeding it up, but reducing an incredible amount of cost involved. So, you know, you can imagine the idea where we can take that idea even a step further and say, okay, not only are we arranging the leasing process between the guy leasing the car and the guy whose car is, you know, he's leasing, but you can imagine how this works with car registration. Anytime you have a record, anytime you need a digital record or a physical record, if you will, because effectively digital steps in as a physical record, that's when you can use blockchain to great effect. Because it can involve smart contracts, it can be immutable, so it can't be changed later on. You've overcome the trust problem. And there's really, I think, a huge case to be made, not just in the case of what we call the virtual world, but in real-world examples.
And this is the reason why mostly the insurance and financial companies are very excited in implementation of blockchain, because it's really saving a lot of costs on the back office processes, like when a lot of people have to look on some paper and had to sign and then move to the other guy, and there's a lot of manual processes which can be blown out by smart contracts.
So you mean the document management systems, like to simplifying the workflows?
For example. Yeah.
For example.
Well,
what other examples might there be for as of today, where would you see the blockchain as a great fit for what kind of problems? Because you said that we build it for to address the problem. So for what kind of problem?
How much time do we have? to go back to the healthcare example, I've got plenty of healthcare examples. To go back to the healthcare example, there's a company called Patientory. It's an Atlanta-based startup. And what they're doing is developing a blockchain-based platform for securing health data for patients, providers, and medical institutions. So what does that mean? It means that the software is providing patients with an easy way to track doctor's visits, medical bills, personal medical information, insurance, going to the smart contracts point, immunizations, and pharmacy medications. So it's managing all of that process. So that's an example in healthcare.
Great.
Other great example is unlocking the values from loyalty points. Like right now you have a lot of loyalty cards or a lot of loyalty points which is separated. But with the using of blockchain, you can transfer or change or exchange these values between each other. So like you can if you are flying a lot and you have a lot of flight miles, you can imagine in the future that you can pay in your grocery store, which is quite, I can imagine right now, let's do something like this.
Well, I have to admit I'm not a user of loyalty cards.
But for example, my mom has a full wallet, a full purse of it.
Well, yeah, I don't have a big enough wallet. Maybe if I carried a purse, then I would be able to carry more loyalty cards. That's kind of the problem, too, is that loyalty cards tend to exist in a physical world more than a virtual world. But yeah, maybe one day we'll figure out, and I think Apple's already working on this for a future iOS release, is trying to figure out how do we put the loyalty cards and passports and all the other documents that we have to carry into the phone. But you know, I'm not sure if that's like my favorite blockchain example. I will say, though, that earlier this year in the photography space, intellectual property and being able to prove who owns what in terms of intellectual property is important. It's important for photographers especially. At CES earlier this year, Kodak actually unveiled some plans to launch its own cryptocurrency called Kodak Coin, and that was designed to ensure that photographers are paid appropriately for usage. So that's one of the huge issues in the photography community. The other one is that they've developed an image rights platform called Kodak One. And this is going to allow photographers to securely register both new and old work. So that's really going to transform that industry if it is executed well.
And I expect for the musicians it's the same, right?
Yeah, it is, very much so. And people creating films, of course, you can imagine that. Absolutely. Anytime there is creation of something in the real world, we can then go back and link it to something virtual in terms of the blockchain to prove who owns what. And if we implement smart contracts on top of it, if somebody deserves to be paid because they created something amazing, well, then we can ensure that as well.
Yeah, but there is still quite a big question about enforcement between the real world and the digital. But for example, where is the smart contracts best use case? I think right now is crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm.
This was the main reason why the cryptocurrency raised it dramatically. It started with Ethereum, which is right now the second. Right now it's the third biggest cryptocurrency. This is the biggest player in the field of smart contracts platform. When they raised like 70 millions in their ICO, which is acronym of initial coin offering.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a joke from IPO from the classic world, but then a lot of other projects start to use it when they saw the potential. If you get some idea, you can quite easily raise like from units of millions to tens, even to hundreds, and even more to billions. And you can skip the process of classic funding through the VCs, which is quite long, and it could be really painful. But here was also a lot of problems with scams, and we were trying in ISO Index to warn people again.
Sorry, what is a scam?
Scam? It's a fraud. Like someone is promising you the big returns or some utility, and then he spent money on on the luxury cars.
Well, it has a specific, I think it's worth pointing out, it has an actually specific connotation in terms of initial coin offerings, and that is a scam is anything that's offered to token holders, people who buy the tokens that an ICO is offering. A scam refers to any time that token then doesn't make it onto a currency exchange. And it's a problem because 95% of ICOs don't make it onto currency exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have so much, shall we say, failure, when only 1 in 20 are considered not to be scams, I think it's really a problem for the ICO fundraising industry. And I've fundraised an ICO. We raised $12 million and we did list the token on an exchange. So I guess successfully not a scam, but it's not an easy process. But right now, in terms of popularity, ICOs are outpacing equity-backed financing for certain types of startups. I mean, we're looking at a fundraising process in the ICO that raised, in the first 8 months of 2018, more than $18 billion. So while it's full of scams, there's no doubt that it's still a viable option for some startups.
Last year it was 5.7 billion, so the increase is dramatically. But for some scams, it's quite profitable to get exchange and mimic some work and lie about their activity, and they are making some partnerships which is not real. And there is our mission in ICO Index to make the whole market more efficient and transparent. Like, we are trying to warn people against the bad behavior, like, because you don't have time to watch every project and everything. But we are more community-based, like a lot of people who are doing the analysis in their free time or also in their professional time, they are sharing their opinions or their findings.
And crypto world,
excuse me?
Do you think AI can help here?
Yeah, there were some approaches to try utilize the AI in this process, but make an ICO could be very profitable, so the some scammers are investing a lot of money to make everything proper. So nowadays it's quite hard.
And in general, you mentioned earlier that AI will shake with blockchain. So how or where?
It was not my idea, but I think we will see very interesting combination of AI and blockchain. For example, there is a very interesting concept called DAO, Decentralized Autonomous Organization, which you can imagine like some company based on smart contracts, which can operate autonomous. Like, if
it's hard to imagine for me.
you can imagine like autonomous Uber. Like, if you have a self-driving car like Tesla, mm-hmm. that cars can work together without not nowadays, but maybe in future without any human interruption.
Yeah, I think one of the things about AI is the enormous amount of data that it allows us to process. And it really opens up, I think, a whole world of data analysis that we've never seen before. But I think one of the things that blockchain can do in terms of AI, and I know we talked about the power of artificial intelligence in the last podcast, but I think this is really a critical point, because one of the things that blockchain can do is it can allow us to monetize this information. So, for example, there's a startup called Ocean Protocol, and their whole goal is to allow for sharing and monetizing of data. So you can imagine a scenario where you are actually getting paid, and a lot of people argue that this is exactly what Facebook ought to be doing. Facebook, because they're using your data, you ought to be paid for that. I fully agree. And I think blockchain can allow us to monetize our own data in the future.
Yeah, I like that idea, really. Like, being paid for using Facebook.
Yeah, because nowadays the Facebook is not a product. You are the product of Facebook for the companies which is paying for the ads. And through the weekend there was another hack where was breached, like data about 50 million people. Mm. So even big companies like Facebook is not secure enough.
Well, think about all the data that you share with, you mentioned earlier Uber, Think about all the information that you share with Uber. I mean, just knowing where you're traveling and when, that's an incredible amount of information. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned, we had a discussion earlier about the centralization of Uber, actually, because a lot of people think of it as ride sharing as sort of the ultimate example of decentralization. Well, actually, it's not. A better example would be another startup that I found called Arcade City, and they're facilitating all the transactions through a blockchain system. So, for example, they're operating kind of similarly to ride-sharing companies, but they allow drivers to establish their own rates, and they take, a percentage of the rider fares, and they're logging all the interactions. But whereas Uber and competitor Lyft are highly centralized, Arcade City can appeal to professional drivers who would rather build up their own transportation business rather than being controlled from a central corporate headquarters, i.e. that of Uber or Lyft. And, you know, drivers in this scenario are able to set their own rates. They're able to build their own customer base and offer additional services like deliveries or roadside assistance, stuff like that. So I think it's important to think about all the ways that this data can be used.
Yeah, that's all what we tackled that before. So it's about privacy and being transparent, not being transparent, be identifiable with all the things that store. So, gentlemen, my last question: how do you see blockchain in 3 years? Jakub.
When I see every day income flow of great minds which work before in cryptographic or even genetics or physics, mathematician, I have no fear about the future of blockchain. And also when I see the interest from the corporations, you can check the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, which is a group, the biggest corporation of the world, like JP Morgan or Intel, Microsoft, ING, Bank Santander, or BP, British Petroleum, that blockchain is here to stay. But on the other hand, there is still some chance that it will be replaced by another type of architectures like DAG, DAC, the directed acyclic graph, or with other type of architecture. But the amount of development is bigger than before, and people see a lot of times just the big headlines like, oh, there is a cryptocurrency bubble, or there is the Bitcoin is going to the zero, but it's not true. There were never more developers and great minds, and also marketers and sales guys working on this industry.
Okay, thank you, Sean. Where do you see blockchain?
I do think it will be here, but I think we need to think about it in terms of development, and I think it's quite useful to think about it in terms of a practical application. I always want to try to explain blockchain in terms of how it can actually be used. So I think one of the ways that we can think about or frame the question is if we think about it in the context of healthcare. We're currently, in the short term, like in this time period, we're working on pilot projects, so practical applications, but we don't use any patient data. I think in the medium term, we are looking at being able to scale blockchain applications with permissioned stakeholders, and we'll start to see some handling of patient data. And then in the long term, I think that we can see a patient-driven system with master health records and access rights, and we can put the data into the hands of the patient rather than cordoning it off and not allowing them to see their own data. I think that's where blockchain goes. It's more about democratizing our own data.
So finally, giving the blockchain enables to be your own boss life for the first time. You can be quite independent. It was we can never see this before. Like, I am from Slovakia, and we saw like every 20 or 25 years big inflation or corrupted government, or we saw in the past that we can't rely on international agreements, and so.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be the case that the amount of data is going to increase, the number of stakeholders and the scalability will increase, and the amount of control that we have as participants in the blockchain is also going to increase.
We are still in the prototype phase, but the first real world use case starting to be applicable.
All right, so very promising. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here today. And that's it for today.
Thank you.
Thanks.